Gosh, what a great guest. John D'Souza, he was a former FBI special agent. He had the paranormal desk assignment at the FBI where all these very strange and mysterious stories came into. And, of course, that desk was turned into the X-Files television show that Chris Carter so successfully ran for a number of years. We're going to come back in a moment. We'll talk more with John about these strange things happening on this planet, and we'll take your calls on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, John D'Souza with us, of course. We'll take your calls, the X-Man. John, of everything, well, first of all, how long were you on that paranormal desk at the FBI? How long did that last?
That was at least 10 years.
Wow, that's a long time. Of everything that came across that desk, is it that one story that really sticks out in your mind that just baffled you?
Oh, geez, I have quite a few, but I can tell you one right off the
bat.
We got a police cooperation request in from a sheriff in a mid-sized town who happened to have the largest prison in the town in his basement. The basement of his facility just happened to be the prison tank area for his jurisdiction, for his town. And he was baffled and at his wit's end because he had a lot of poltergeist activity. Well, what he was told by prisoners and deputies was poltergeist activity. And he didn't know what to do. He put in a police cooperation request to the FBI for a subject matter expert, anybody who could give him a consultation. And so we reported over there. We went over there to where he was, and we did the testing for trickery, for, you know, noise in the pipes, for other things. We did some interviews as well from prisoners who were terrified and deputies who weren't very happy either. He actually got to the point where he had deputies who were quitting rather than remaining working in this entire prison cell area that he had in the lower level.
Who blames him, right?
Yeah. So we tested for strings and wires. We tested for, but apparently everything was heavy objects, and it was the opening and closing of cell doors that it was impossible to move independently. It couldn't be happening the way it was, and yet there it was on CCTV, on camera, that certain cells would open and close on their own with no one inside of them.
Jeez.
And prisoners knew exactly what was going on. It was absolutely insane what was happening. And so we continued to investigate, and one of the deputies actually came to us as we started investigating prisoner deaths in that area, because we investigated all the physical possibilities, and there were none that could explain what was going on in this entire prison area. And so one of the deputies told us, as we were investigating prisoner deaths, he said, "We're looking in the wrong way." He said, "You got to look at the deputies' deaths." He says, "Because in particular, we had one here 10 years ago that was a great deputy who was this huge fella who was about 6'5", who was just a really reliable, solid guy. And one day, three prisoners planned and executed taking him down, and were able to actually kill him as part of an escape." And they said that happened 10 years ago. And so we started looking for those records and investigating that. And it was really an interesting event. And it was tragic, incredibly tragic. And then one weekend, as we took off, there was what we believe was a culmination of this poltergeist activity occurred this particular weekend. And what happened was the deputy who had told us to go look at worker records to find out what really happened, he was actually on duty one weekend when, again, three prisoners, very similar to the incident that happened 10 years previous, three prisoners decided to escape, and they actually attacked him. And were able to get some non-plastic, because a lot of things are made out of plastic in these areas, to prevent them being used as weapons. They were able to get some non-plastic utensils, and they were able to beat this deputy. They beat him His eyes were almost swollen. They were able to get him in the corner there, and one of them was using a heavier object and was about to smash his head open.
God.
And he said that when the blow was coming to his head, he says a strong right arm came and stopped it.
Out of nowhere.
Out of nowhere. And he looked up and he saw these broad shoulders and a crew cut, a graying sort of crew cut. And he says it was the deputy from 10 years ago who had been killed.
Wow.
On that cell block.
Oh.
And he says he was up there swinging away at those three prisoners.
Jeez.
And he says there was a lot of light that was being issued every time he was punching at these prisoners, and the prisoners just went terrified. They just turned tail. They screamed. They knew there was something paranormal, something supernatural going on.
Saved by a dead deputy.
And he saved wow. his life. And he says he knew the deputy from 10 years ago, so he knew who it was immediately because he's a very unique-looking fella. And he just, and those prisoners just took off and ran and hid in different corners of the cell, of the prison block. And when we got there later, they were just gibbering idiots. They could barely even talk. They were so scared. And the deputy, who was pretty badly injured, he told us a straight story of what happened. And he said, and we concluded with the sheriff when we gave him our debrief, we basically told him we think this was the culmination of the poltergeist activity because this individual had been knew that this takedown was being planned, and he was trying to get back to warn the sheriff and the deputies that this was being planned and that it was going to happen again, just like it happened to him.
That's amazing. Now, when you were running the paranormal desk, John, did special field operators with the FBI, did they know about the paranormal files?
I don't know about field operators. I mean, we had to have, connections throughout the FBI who would help us with different occurrences, different things that would happen. But that was throughout the FBI. And I can give you one example. We had
sure.
we had a huge event that occurred in Alaska, in Nome, Alaska, and it was actually the subject of a movie where there was an enormous number of disappearances of about 25 people over a very short period.
That was a great movie, by the way.
Yes, and it occurred in Nome, and it was finally decided to send a bunch of FBI agents over there to investigate, and they were told that they were going to stay there in Nome, which is it's not the best place to be, especially in winter. And they were sent over there to investigate what was the source of this serial killing that was disappearing all these people.
It was the fourth kind. It was a movie, right?
That's correct.
Yeah.
That's correct. Yes, because a lot of people felt that these disappearances were connected to alien abduction, and the reason was because most of the abductions, almost all of them, occurred when there were these crazy lights in the sky. Even if they weren't close by, there were lights in the sky that suddenly just appeared, and then the abduction would happen mm-hmm. shortly after that. And so, but unfortunately, those FBI agents, the other field operators that you talked about, they were not influenced by my work, and they came to the conclusion that all of these disappearances were simply the result of, and I think this happened in 1995. Oh, no, I'm sorry. It happened in 2005, something around there. And their final conclusion was it was all the results of drunkenness and freak accident.
Oh, I don't know about that, John. How about you?
Yeah, there was a lot of
weird things were happening. I mean, the movie, if the movie was anywhere as close to the files you're talking about,
yeah.
Something bizarre was going on in Nome, Alaska.
Yeah, I think so, too.
I mean, people had stories, recollections of something horrible happening and, just things that scared the living daylights out of them.
Yeah. Also, the people of Nome, they know drunkenness. And they know what happens in drunkenness. And they knew that the FBI conclusions were incorrect in the final conclusions that they came to, because they knew that when someone is severely, severely in alcohol and drunk, they don't haul themselves up to a very difficult cliff and throw themselves into the Bering Sea so that there's no trace of their body. They
no.
don't do that.
Let's go to the phones now for you. First-time caller Vincent in New Hampshire. Hi, Vince. Go ahead.
Hi. How you doing? Happy New Year to you.
You too, sir.
Yeah, I drive at night. I've been listening to your show. I enjoy it immensely.
Great.
I want to tell you about a story, something that happened back in 78, something that happened to me and a relative of mine, and it's because a lot of people seen this, except for this particular incident that was involved. If you're familiar with the New York area, there's a highway called the Bronx Parkway. And I was driving at night, and I was on my way to my cousin's girlfriend's house. I was supposed to meet him there, and then we're going to go out, have some fun. I was about maybe 10 minutes away. And along the Bronx River Parkway, you have a train station that's called the Penn Central. It goes from New York City to White Plains, New York. Okay? Now, it's an electric train, so every once in a while at night, you would see that arc from the third rail. Okay? Now, I'm driving up the parkway, and all of a sudden, everything around me turned bright blue. And I said, wow, that was bright. And I look over, and there's no train. So I couldn't think too much about it. So 10 minutes later, I get off the road. I get to my cousin's girlfriend's house. They weren't there yet. And seconds later, they pulled up. And my cousin had a van that he used for work. And we started talking. He says, you're not going to believe what we just saw. I says, what? He says, we're just sitting outside the van, just, bull talking. He says, we're looking up. He says, we noticed this, just look at the small plane flying over. He says, all of a sudden, this thing came out of nowhere. Had lights all around it. It hovered over it. He says, I don't know what this thing did, but the plane disappeared. And when this thing took off, everything turned bright blue. I said, you got to be kidding me. I said, when did this happen? He said, like 10 minutes ago. Well, that night, we had the Eastchester, the Scarsdale police following this thing over the golf course. But prior to all this happening, the first report came into Tuckahoe Police Station. And I remember talking to the cop the next morning. His name was Don Reed. And I says, Don, I says, what happened yesterday with this UFO? He says, well, I got the first call. He says, somebody kept calling in. Something was over his house. And we thought the guy was drunk, so I ended up, I had to go out there. He says, Vinny, sure enough, this thing was there. The guy comes out of his house. He says, well, there it is. He says, what are you going to do about it? He says, sir, if this thing landed on your front lawn and asked you for directions, I still wouldn't do anything about it. And he left. And then other stories kept forward in. My cousin's mother, which is actually, he was my second cousin. His mother, which is my cousin, her girlfriend was sitting in the kitchen with her daughter talking, and it sounded like a rumbling noise, like a truck was running outside. And they looked out the front window, and there was nothing there. Then they looked out the back window, and this thing with lights around it was hovering over the trees. So they shut the windows. They hid. And this went on, I said, back in 78, somewhere maybe around May, June, somewhere around there. But I do remember that there was some sort of a story in the papers, but it's got to be in the police report somewhere. Now, not too long ago, I got in touch with my cousin, and he doesn't remember it. I tracked down his girlfriend. She lives in Florida. And I says, Barbara, do you remember this? She says, I got a good memory. She says, but I don't remember any of it.
Weird.
It seems as though anyone who physically saw this can erase their memory of what happened. I said, I remember this like it was yesterday,
John, let's check in with John on it. John, could that happen? Did you come across things in your file where people just lost their memories?
I've been with people where they were with me, and we observed the same vehicle in the sky at the, well, you're assuming it's a vehicle, the same thing in the sky at the same moment. And a few moments later, their memory of it was gone.
Was gone.
Completely gone. And I was, and mine was still there. And I would be baffled. I would just say, how could you not remember that you just saw that? And they would say, I don't know what you're talking about.
They had the ability to erase things. Lisa in Portland, Oregon. Hi, Lisa.
Hi, George. Hey. Awesome show.
Thank you. Yeah, he's a great guest. Wow.
Yeah. So my question is do you believe that the orbs are also unmanned?
Unmanned. What do you think about orbs, John? You ever come across those?
Yes, it depends on what she means by unmanned, because no physical body in there, but the orbs have some kind of spiritual, for lack of a better word, some kind of spiritual essence to them, where they're conscious, they're aware, they're alive. I mean, it seems to me like they're alive from the encounters that I've had. And, you know, so
you don't think they're like disembodied souls or anything like that?
Yeah, very possible. Yeah, it's very possible, because they are something that's not biological, and yet is something, like you said, it's something that is conscious on some level. So, yeah, I do believe they
are. You go to a lot of conferences, John. Did you ever meet up with the late astronaut Edgar Mitchell?
No, I don't believe I met with him.
You would have really enjoyed talking to him, because, you know, though he would always tell me, George, I never saw anything on the moon. He was there on Apollo 14. But I've been told by people in government that UFOs exist and we're being visited. And it's just more cooperation with things that you saw in your files.
Yeah, I would just like the astronauts or anybody to tell me, how is it possible that we stopped going to the moon in the 70s and have never returned? And same is true basically for every other nation as well. And what was the power that told us we can't go back there? That's the basic thing I would like to know.
Did we get scared to not come back?
Yeah.
Or threatened?
Were the Apollos escorted off and told, hey, you're not coming back here?
You never know. Now, your next book, The X-Man, A Paranormal Life, comes out when in 2019?
Yeah, it'll be probably late 2019. I've got to work out the kinks on how to tell the story and get it through the secrecy requirements. That's the main thing.
So you still have to go through that?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Person always has to go through that, no matter what.
Did Hoover have files like this? J. Edgar Hoover, when he was there?
Yes, Hoover had all kinds of files, and, you know, today people make a lot out of the communications and the memos that went to him and go to others, like the Hoddle memo,
right?
Where he wrote and others wrote about the Roswell affair and the Roswell crash and what happened. But what people don't understand about Hoover is that he didn't necessarily believe or not believe in UFOs. He just didn't care. What he cared about was jurisdiction. So if somebody told him, hey, all these UFO cases are happening, and the Air Force is all over this stuff, and so the FBI probably better get up to speed on this.
Yeah, he wanted it. All right, John, we're going to come back and take final calls in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. We are back with our final segment with John D'Souza. John, what kind of technologies do you think we may have picked up from these ETs?
I think we may have picked up all kinds of technologies. The question is, what were we allowed to distribute and keep?
Aha, into industry.
Exactly. And unfortunately, I don't think at the time in 1947, I think any of the real tech, a lot of the real tech, was taken by the elite powers in control, by the cabal, by those who sit over the nations. And they kept the real stuff, the stuff that we could use right now.
You think if people interviewed Comey or Mueller and asked them about these paranormal files, would those directors have known what was going on?
No, I think those guys are just about political power and what's right in front of their faces. I don't think they really cared about the esoteric or things that would actually help people in any real sense, in any real long-lasting sense.
What was, in your career, the greatest joy for you, John, when you were on that desk?
My greatest joy has been finding people who had similar experiences with the paranormal and who had similar challenges, really, and were able to be helped by something that was, you know, like in one of my books or in one of my cases, my investigations, where it was able to actually bring them something that made them feel like they were not alone, like they had some resolution or some closure from one of my books or documentaries or presentations. And that really can bring tears to your eyes when you hear from people that they had something that for years they had no resolution on or no support or anything from friends and family, and were able to finally realize that somebody else had a similar experience.
Let's go to the phones again. Thomas in La Jolla, California is with us. Hey, Tom, welcome back.
Hi, George. Happy New Year to you.
Thank you.
Staff and the audience. And, John, thank you, first of all, for your service with the Bureau. And, John, comment and then a question. You know, in the mid-1990s, there were four Hollywood movies. There was Contact with Jodie Foster. There was The Arrival with Charlie Sheen and Terry Polo. There was Independence Day. And then, of course, there was the first X-Files movie. And they all came out within a very short time. And I can't help but wonder, you know, with a Hollywood movie, perception is reality. A person goes to a movie to be entranced, to go into a trance, so to speak. My question for you, John, is it possible that the cabal, government agencies, transnational corporations, are collaborating with Hollywood to put out a message, predictive programming, so to speak, a disclosure through movies, perception is reality again? And I was wondering if you would comment on that, particularly since you were indirectly involved with the X-Files, and all four of these movies had a very deep impact on the audiences.
Yeah, absolutely. And I remember each of those films. They were really impactful.
Oh, and blockbusters, too.
Yeah. And yes, I absolutely believe that Hollywood is working hand in hand with some malevolent powers that tend to put out, yeah, predictive programming. They tend to put out an agenda, a dark agenda sometimes, that they want to spread among the populace and to prepare us, to herd us towards the same conclusion. And, yeah, that happens all the time. However, here's the trick. Hollywood's not monolithic either, just like many other institutions. And there are times when good powers, powers that are in our favor, are able to use Hollywood to reveal certain things that actually do help us. I would cite a few movies were put out, and since the gentleman's interested in movies, I would tell him to check out with a fresh eye the original Matrix movie.
Mm-hmm.
Also a movie called Jupiter Ascending, and John Carter of Mars. These three movies all had in common a couple of factors that when they were being made, they kind of were made by a series of accidents that came together. And then when they were ready to be released, some sorts of powers above Hollywood level found out that these movies were revealing tremendous truths that they didn't want revealed. And there was an immediate move to stop their publicity campaign, to cancel any financing for publicity, propaganda for these movies, and they tried to bury these movies immediately at high levels. And again, there were the first Matrix, Jupiter Ascending, and John Carter of Mars. All of those three movies reveal extraordinary things about the cabal, the elite powers in control,
and about our true history, the true history of humanity that the cabal does not want revealed.
Let's go to Cornelius in Alexandria, Louisiana. Hello, Cornelius.
Hello, but I'm going to wish you a Merry Christmas because I couldn't get on for the Christmas thing. And George, you're great. John, you're great. And, of course, our great Tommy Danheiser. But
thank you.
My question for you, I was an old military police officer, John, and this off-the-books report, I've been trying to get the FBI to give me some information about my case, and George knows about it, and Tommy. And I did get some FOIA information where I did contact the FBI about some different things, not paranormal now, but just some other things. And they said I'd never contact them, but I've got the information now. I got it Saturday, so that was my Christmas present, saying that I did contact them by phone, and I did write Mulder and Robert Mueller. So I need to know if I can get the off-the-books report through a FOIA request. God bless you, Tommy, George, and all the Coast to Coast listeners and callers. And you too, John, I'm going to get your book.
Thank you. Thank you, sir.
Can he get information that way, John?
Off the books means off the books, unofficial. It means
so probably
hidden,
not.
Hidden, obscure, and you're not going to see it. And it's the sort of thing that operational agents keep that do a lot of things that just can't be put in FBI files or, you know, any sort of organizational files. And that happens, you know, that happens mm-hmm. a lot. We have agents that work in the black world and in hidden technologies and all kinds of things. And, you know, it's incumbent on them to keep their own OTB book at all times.
John, who are the men in black? Are they ETs coming to tell us to be quiet, or are they government officials? Who are they?
You know, from the experiences I've had, I believe that they are, truthfully, I believe that they are reanimated corpses that are
really
used and programmed by the elite powers in control, by the cabal, in using alien tech that they were given back in 1947 in order to police and to reconnoiter and receive information about alien visitation and UFOs all throughout the world.
That could be intriguing, to be sure. Let's go to Bill, truck driving in the state of Washington. Bill, go ahead, sir.
Hey, John. Hey, George. Happy New Year.
Thank you, Bill.
I had a question about something you said about in China, there was a very big reception, a lot of positive energy, a lot of interest in the paranormal. And, you know, there were some episodes of The X-Files where they dealt with human enhancement of soldiers. Like in Vietnam, there was that one episode where the soldiers didn't sleep. They were given some sort of chemical compound that prevented them from sleeping so they could be more effective. And, you know, I've seen some things in the media that have me a little bit concerned. And I'm also drawing parallels to a time in history the Russians refer to as the Great Game. It was before World War One. I don't know if you're familiar with it, but there are a lot of parallels to what's going on right now. And China was a big victim of the so-called Great Game. And I'm concerned that maybe this time they don't want to be a victim. You know, they might actually want to win it. And I was wondering if, you know, when you were discussing these things with the audience or whoever in China, did you have a sense that some of them could have been undercover intelligence and security service personnel? And if so, did they seem particularly interested in biotech and human enhancement type things that happened in America?
Good question. What do you think, John?
Yeah, I would say yes and no. Yes to the first part of his question and no to the second part. There were definitely people we would call minders in the audiences.
Plants.
Traveling with us, who were, you know, associated with intelligence services, who were supposed to, you know, keep an eye on us and make sure that we didn't broach topics like the exact topics that this young man was just talking about. So that's why the answer to the second question is no, that no one broached those kinds of very, I would say, very sensitive topics with us. And if they had, they probably would have
been discouraged from going any further into them.
Joe in Long Island, New York is with us. Joe, go ahead.
Hi, John. Do you think from your experience at the desk that people could activate ESP at a higher level, the common man, that these abilities are there, that people just don't know how to access it or activate it? And what would you speculate on these hidden technologies? Would you have any further speculations on that?
Yes, people definitely can activate these advanced techs, these hidden abilities, ESP and so forth, at much, much higher levels. However, they need focus points. They need focus points, and you need technology the Tesla-type technology that I talk about in movies and in various forums. People need to use devices that focus their heart chakra and their third eye and so forth. And that technology is out there. It is out there, and it is available to people. People just have to find it, though.
They sure do. Tom in the Bronx, it's your turn. Thomas, welcome to the show.
Happy New Year to everybody. I'd like to say this, that I wonder if these disappearances that have happened, can it be that it's an alien technology to actually disintegrate people?
Disintegrate people. Poof, they're gone. What do you think of that, John?
Well, I would say not to disintegrate them because they have to get a benefit. Alien visitors or whatever creatures are out there, disappearing people, if that's the case, they have to get a benefit, and I'm sure they get a huge benefit from these people if they are taking them. And some of the benefit, I believe, is probably physical, and some of it could be non-physical, spiritual and otherwise. And I believe they get plenty of benefit out of the people that they disappear.
Barry in Rock Hills. Go ahead, South Carolina. Go ahead, Barry.
Hello there, George. I heard you talking to that Cornelius and Thomas.
Yes, he was. He got through.
No kidding. And I've got a couple of quick questions for John. But real quick, George, I want to thank you so much for the night before last. Christmas Eve was one of the finest nights I've ever spent. Your wonderful comments and for me and for the whole coast-to-coast listeners, and it's true.
Wow, you're welcome, and we'll do it again next year and New Year's and everything else, Bear.
You got it. Lionel fans don't blew me away. But, John, this is for you. Two quick questions. One.
How about one quick one, because we're almost done.
All right. What is the most outrageous, underhanded, criminal, crooked, terrible thing that J. Edgar Hoover ever did that you know
that you might know of, John? Can you go public with that?
Yeah, sure. It was the files that he kept on everyone that were in an archive that he kept in his basement that were basically just incredibly illegal stuff that had people's most personal moments on them.
Including John F. Kennedy stuff, I guess.
Yeah, right? JFK, JFK.
MLK.
Yeah. And many, many others. And that single act of keeping all those files that were many of which were acquired extremely illegally, I would say that was the worst thing.
John, any local conferences coming up in the States that I might run into you?
Oh, yes, absolutely. I will be at Contact in the Desert.
I'll see you then. That's in the 1st of June for me, I think, right around there.
May 31st to June 3rd. And that'll be a big one, of course.
We'll celebrate my birthday again, John.
Oh, good, George. I love doing
that. We'll do that. You keep in touch, and when the new book is out, you're back on, okay?
Great. Sounds great, George.
Dr. John D'Souza, FBI agent, head up the paranormal desk. Just an amazing person. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Boros, Tim Banal, and George Knapp, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.